The Hits. Let Your Hair Down.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, small groups of children near Idlib, Syria, can often be found working in large fields of trash. They look for plastic bottles and bags, soda cans, or pieces of metal to sell to help feed their families. 12-year-old Hassan Alhamdi is one of those children. He says he once had dreams of growing up to be a teacher. But now he is proud to be able to provide for his family. I collect plastic bags for work, he says. I leave in the morning and come back at night. I bring food and bread for my siblings. Hassan, his parents, and his 7 brothers and sisters fled their home in Idlib more than a year ago. Almost 1 million other people were forced out of their homes because of fighting in Syria's ongoing civil war. Now, Hassan and his siblings work every day of the week. They do not go to school. Their parents say it is saddening to watch their children grow up without an education. Aid organizations and other governments have not helped them, says the children's mother, Mahdia Alhamid. These jobs will impact everything about their future, she said. They don't even know how to write. Ali is Hassan Alhamdi's 11-year-old brother. He says he dreams of having a bicycle, a football, and an education. But for now, he says, he is mostly just tired. I wish I could go to school, he added. It would be better, but we are working. The non-governmental organization Human Rights Watch says about 2 million children inside Syria do not go to school. Outside the country, nearly 1 million Syrian refugee children are also not attending classes. The United Nations Children's Organization, UNICEF, says millions more children are being pushed into the workforce as poverty deepens because of the pandemic. The longer children remain out of school, the organization says, the less likely it is that they will have the chance to return. Non-governmental organizations have set up some schools in the Idlib area. But officials at the schools say that many children who do attend class come in late or leave early for their jobs. Everything in our society has changed from the war, said Muzaniz, a school supervisor. Some students work because their families are poor. Others have parents that were killed or wounded. Along with missing their education, children are in danger of getting injured or treated unfairly at work, Nice said. Child labor also could worsen the area's already weakened economy. Child labor affects everything in society, she said. And when it increases, so does unemployment. Employers hire children for low pay, replacing adults. Selling the trash collected in the fields is not enough to support Hassan and Ali Alhamdi and the other families. Increasingly, the boys have to walk farther and farther from home to find enough trash to sell.
I'm getting so tired, but what can I do? Hassan al-Hamdi said. This is our situation. We have to work to feed ourselves.
The Swedish carmaker Volvo announced this week that it will only make electric vehicles by 2030. Volvo is the second large car company to say it will stop making traditional internal combustion engines. In January, American carmaker General Motors said it would only make battery-powered vehicles by 2035. Henrik Green is Volvo's chief technology officer. He said, there is no long-term future for cars with traditional engines. If you want to buy one of these Volvos in about 9 years, you will have to make your order online. You will still be able to look at cars at a Volvo store, however. The current Volvo stores, which are known as dealerships, will remain in place so customers can look at cars and have them repaired. In making the announcement, Volvo said it also plans to show a new electric vehicle. The automobile company said it hopes that within 4 years, half of its sales around the world will come from electric vehicles. The other half will come from cars known as hybrids. Hybrid cars use a combination of batteries and traditional engines to move the vehicle. Green said the move to electric vehicles will help Volvo meet the expectations of our customers and be part of the solution when it comes to fighting climate change. As technology improves and governments try to reduce pollution, more car makers like Volvo are increasing production of electric vehicles. However, Americans continue to buy more vehicles powered by traditional engines. Only about 2% of the cars sold last year in the U.S. were electric. Around the world, about 2.5 million electric vehicles were sold last year, and industry analysts expect that to increase by 70% in 2021. Volvo sold about 660,000 cars worldwide last year. One-sixth of the company's sales came in the U.S. Volvo is known as a Swedish car maker, but it has been owned by a Chinese company since 2010. I'm Dan Friedel.
Many Americans have had trouble getting appointments to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. The process for getting vaccinated is different across U.S. states and communities. Some older people who lack technology experience have found it difficult to follow the necessary requirements to seek appointments through the internet. To get around this, some people have turned to internet bots to help them find a quicker way to get vaccines. A bot is a computer program that works automatically to search for different kinds of information on the internet. People seeking vaccinations often have to search several different vaccine provider websites for available appointments. With the demand for vaccines continuing to outweigh supply, people often have to keep checking sites over and over to find an available time. Sometimes the availabilities can disappear before a person has the chance to complete the appointment process. Bots can be used to continuously search provider sites for the latest availabilities. The bots are often overseen by humans who can then publicize information about the openings on Twitter or through text messages. A second kind of bot that is more worrisome to health officials is called a scalper bot. This kind of bot can automatically book appointments immediately when it finds them. Sometimes these appointments can be offered up for sale. So far, though, there is little evidence that scalper bots are making appointments. Vaccine bots are helping some of the people who use them. Benjamin Shover of Stratford, New Jersey, used a bot system to help get his 70-year-old father a vaccine appointment for early March. Shover learned of the availability from a message on Twitter. "Thank you, thank you, thank you. I got my dad an appointment. Thank you so much," he tweeted. The success, through the Twitter account at New Jersey Vaccine, came a month after he registered for New Jersey's official online appointment system. Shover said his father has limited technical skills and is also physically disabled, making it difficult for him to find an appointment himself online. The developer of the bot, software engineer Kenneth Sue, said he first created it to help get an appointment for his wife's parents. Now he and other volunteers are using the bot to assist others who are frustrated by New Jersey's online appointment system. These are people who just want to know they're on a list somewhere and they are going to be helped, Sue said. "We want everyone vaccinated. We want to see our grandparents." Health officials in some communities have opposed the use of such bots. One bot that recently identified availabilities at a provider in a rural area of Massachusetts led many people who live in the Boston area to register for the spots. Local officials chose to cancel all of the appointments. They changed to a private system and started spreading news about availabilities through officials and community centers. "Our goal was to help our residents get their vaccination," said Tracy Rogers, the head of emergency preparedness for the local Massachusetts government. "But 95% of the appointments we had were from outside the area." One area of New Jersey added a website tool designed to confirm that visitors are human. Officials there said the tool was aimed at blocking efforts to game the system with a bot. Noah Marcus created a vaccine bot that is now blocked in New Jersey. The 24-year-old computer programmer says the official appointment system is not fair. He said the system was already favoring the tech-savvy and the person who can just sit in front of their computer all day, hitting refresh. I'm Brian Lynn.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, Wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Britain was once the most powerful nation in the world. It ruled a far-reaching empire. We look at how British power gave way to American influence after World War II. One can almost name the day when this happened. It was February 21st, 1947. British diplomats in Washington called the State Department. They had two messages from their government. The first was about Greece. The situation there was critical. Greece had been occupied by Germany during the war. Now it was split by a bitter civil war. On one side of the fighting was the Greek royal family, supported by Britain. On the other side were communist-led rebels, supported by Yugoslavia and the Soviet Union. British forces had helped keep Greece from becoming communist at the end of World War II. A few years later, Britain could no longer help. It needed all its strength to rebuild after the war. So on that February day in 1947, Britain told the United States it would soon end all support for Greece. Britain's second message that day was about Turkey. Turkey was stronger than Greece, but the concern was that it too could become communist unless it received outside help. Britain warned the United States that the Soviet Union would soon extend its control all the way across Eastern Europe to the Eastern Mediterranean. It called on President Harry Truman to provide strong American support to help Greece and Turkey resist the communist threat. Britain, in effect, was asking the United States to take over leadership of the Western world. The United States was ready to accept this new responsibility. For months, relations between the United States and the Soviet Union had been growing worse and worse. The two countries had fought together as allies in the Second World War. But Soviet actions after the war shocked the American people. The Soviet Union wanted to block Western political and economic influence in Central and Eastern Europe. It wanted to extend its own influence instead. So after the war, it forced a number of countries to establish communist governments.
From Stettin in the Baltic to Trieste in the Adriatic, an iron curtain has descended across the continent.
Britain's Prime Minister Winston Churchill described the situation in a speech in March of 1946 at Westminster College in the American state of Missouri.
Behind that line lie all the capitals of the ancient states of Central and Eastern Europe: Warsaw, Berlin, Prague, Vienna, Budapest, Belgrade, Bucharest, and Sofia. All these famous cities and the populations around them lie in what I must call the Soviet sphere. And all our subjects, in one form or another, not only to Soviet influence, but to a very high and in some cases increasing measure of control from Moscow.
Churchill warned that the Soviet Union was trying to expand its power. He described it as an iron curtain falling across the middle of Europe. This iron curtain divided Europe into a communist East and a democratic West. The situation was made even more tense by news coming from China. China was a divided nation at the end of World War II. The forces of nationalist leader Chiang Kai-shek controlled the southwestern part of the country. Communist forces under Mao Zedong controlled the north. Both the United States and the Soviet Union expected that Chiang Kai-shek would be able to unite China. Chiang and the Nationalists won several early victories over the Communists, but Mao and his forces used a growing hatred of the Nationalist government to win support. Slowly, they began to win battles and capture arms. Early in 1949, Communist forces took control of Peking, now Beijing, and Tianjin. They captured Shanghai and Canton. By the end of the year, Chiang and his nationalist forces had to flee to the island of Taiwan. The fall of the nationalist government on the mainland caused a bitter political debate in America. Some critics of the Truman administration thought the United States had not done enough to help the Nationalists. The Truman administration rejected the charges. It said Chiang caused his own defeat by failing to reform and win the support of the Chinese people. Secretary of State Dean Acheson described the defeat this way: "The unfortunate but inescapable fact is that the ominous result of the civil war in China was beyond the control of the government of the United States. Nothing that this country did or could have done within the reasonable limits of its capabilities could have changed that result. Nothing that was left undone by this country has contributed to it. It was the product of internal Chinese forces, forces which this country tried to influence but could not. A decision was arrived at within China, if only a decision by default." The United States was more successful in its policies toward Europe. The British warnings about the communist threat in Greece and Turkey led President Truman to speak to Congress. He said, "I believe that it must be the policy of the United States to support free peoples who are resisting attempted subjugation by armed minorities or by outside pressures." Truman called on Congress to give him $400 million in aid for Greece and Turkey. After a brief but intense national debate, Congress agreed. Truman then launched an effort to save the Greek economy and reorganize the Greek army. Soon after that, Yugoslavia and the Soviet Union ended their aid to Greek rebels. The civil war in Greece ended. American help for Greece and Turkey was the first step in what became known as the Truman Doctrine. The goal of this policy was to stop Soviet aggression anywhere in the world. Truman was willing to use military force to stop the spread of communism, but he also believed it was equally important to build up Western European nations so they would be strong enough to defend themselves. Europe was suffering terribly after World War II. There were severe shortages of food and fuel. Crops were destroyed. Many Europeans were beginning to look to the communists, to anybody, to save them. This is one reason why Truman and his advisors developed a plan to rebuild the economies of Europe. After the war, President Truman made George Marshall his Secretary of State. Marshall had led American troops as a general in World War II. Now, as the nation's top diplomat, he proposed the idea for rebuilding Europe. This idea became known as the Marshall Plan. President Truman explained why there had to be a Marshall Plan. People were starving, he said. There had been food riots in France and Italy. There was not enough fuel. People were cold and sick. Tuberculosis was breaking out. As Truman said later, something had to be done. Secretary of State Marshall described the plan during a congressional hearing in Washington.
Why must the United States carry so great a load in helping Europe? The answer is simple. The United States is the only country in the world today which has the economic power and productivity to furnish the needed assistance. The 6 8/10 billion proposed for the first 15 months is less than a single month's charge of the war. To be quite clear, this unprecedented endeavor of the new world to help the old is neither sure nor easy. It is a calculated risk. It is a difficult program. And you know far better than I do the political difficulties involved in this program. But there's no doubt whatever in my mind that if we decide to do this thing, we can do it successfully. And there's also no doubt in my mind that the whole world hangs in the balance as to what it is to be.
The United States offered aid through the Marshall Plan to all countries in Europe. The Soviet Union and its allies refused help. 16 other countries, however, welcomed the aid. From 1948 to 1952, administrators of the Marshall Plan worked with these countries. The United States spent $13 billion. The plan worked. Agricultural production in Marshall Plan countries increased by 10%. Industrial production increased by 35%. Production in some industries, such as steel, increased by much more. There were political results as well. Stronger economies helped prevent communists from gaining control of the governments in France and Italy. Some Europeans criticized the Marshall Plan. They said it increased tensions between the United States and the Soviet Union in the years after the war. Yet few could deny that the plan was one of the most successful international economic programs in history.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.